What's going on, everyone? Welcome back to another episode of the JT Sports Podcast. I'm your host, JT. Man, we had a crazy week of wild card action, bro. Like, the Browns got annihilated by CJ Stroud. Then you got the Dallas Cowboys going out in typical Cowboys fashion, losing in embarrassing fashion to Jordan Love and the Green Bay Packers. The Lions took care of business against the Rams. And that sets us up for a very, very entertaining divisional round weekend that we have coming up. We got the Buffalo Bills taking on the Chiefs in the trilogy once again. Will Josh Allen finally get from over the hump? I guess we'll see. You got the Ravens taking on the Texans. CJ Stroud versus Lamar Jackson, two of the best quarterbacks in the National Football League. And then on the NFC side of things, I mean, the Green Bay Packers, I definitely feel they got a better chance than what most people are giving them credit for being able to upset the 49ers potentially. And then, of course, we got Buccaneers-Lions. Before we get into my divisional round breakdown and predictions, if you haven't already, leave a like, subscribe to the channel. Remember that every episode of the podcast is available in audio format on all podcasting platforms. Apple, Google, Spotify, Amazon, wherever you get your podcast from, you can find the JT Sports Podcast. Leave us with a 5-star review on Apple and Spotify. Share the pod with your friends, family members, and acquaintances if you enjoy. So we're going to break down the divisional round games. I'm also going to get into a couple of some takeaways that I got from Wildcard Weekend as well. And we're going to start off with the first game of divisional round weekend. The Houston Texans taking on the Baltimore Ravens. The first time these two teams played, the Ravens won. But the final score shows that it was a one-sided affair. But actually, that game was pretty close up until midway through the third quarter when the Ravens started to pull away a little. And the Texans are a really well-coached team. And they're one of those teams that if they play you twice, they're probably going to play you better than what they did the first time they played you. DeMeco Ryans is one of the best defensive minds that we have in the NFL. And week one, when these two teams last faced off against each other, Lamar Jackson didn't have a great performance. Now, I know that was week one. All right. Now you look at the Ravens now, they're a better version of themselves than what they were when the season first started. But this is a really good defense. They are very young. They got a lot of aggressive style players on this defense, such as Jalen Petrie. You also have some really aggressive, really fast linebackers. This defense is perfectly suited from a personnel standpoint to be able to contain Lamar Jackson. And we've seen when you've been able to slow down the rushing attack of the Baltimore Ravens, this offense does have the time to get a little bit wonky. Prime example, when they lost to the Cleveland Browns. The Cleveland Browns beat them, not really having a great display of offense. Well, Deshaun Watson played well in the second half, but mostly they won that game against Baltimore because the Ravens turned the football over and they couldn't get the run game going. Look, Lamar Jackson is the best quarterback in the NFL in my eyes right now. But it still doesn't take away from the fact that, yes, the Ravens are a good team when it comes to throwing the football. They still are a team that needs the run game to be accessible to them for them to have success. The Houston Texans have a really good run defense. Now, they got carved up by Jonathan Taylor a couple of weeks ago, but their run defense looked pretty solid against the Cleveland Browns. Now, defensively, Houston, if they can hinder the rushing attack of Lamar Jackson and the other running backs that they're going to throw out there. Like, don't know how many of you guys remember, but Dalvin Cook plays for the Ravens now. And I definitely do expect him to get a good amount of touches in this game. But with how good the run defense is of Houston, you can make this a team that has to beat you throwing the football with guys like Derek Stingley, Jalen Petrie in the back end. You feel confident about your ability to be able to hold up. Offensively, though, this is probably where this game is going to be won and lost at. The Ravens defense versus the Houston Texans offense. Okay, we've been making a big deal about how the Baltimore Ravens offensively could struggle against D'Amico Ryans because he's a really good defensive coordinator. Well, defensive-minded head coach, right? Well, same thing can be said about Mike McDonald. You see, Mike McDonald has a lot of success against these Kyle Shanahan disciples. You saw what they did to the Miami Dolphins offense, and where does Mike McDaniel come from? The Kyle Shanahan coaching tree, right? Kyle Shanahan, the godfather himself, his offense got shut down by Mike McDonald. And week one, when these two teams played, the Houston Texans didn't have too much success offensively in that game either. Mike McDaniel, Bobby Slowick, and Kyle Shanahan have the same style of offense. Now, they have different tweaks and different variations to certain things, but they've been influenced from Kyle Shanahan. And with Mike McDonald having a good grasp on how to slow down these kinds of offenses, I expect Houston's offense to struggle in this game. All right. Now, they do have CJ Stroud. All right. And this is what makes this game a little bit weird when it comes to deciding who could win this thing. Because CJ Stroud is a top five quarterback right now. All right. And I can only name four quarterbacks right now that I would take over CJ Stroud: Lamar, Patrick Mahomes, Josh Allen, and Joe Burrow. That's it. And C.J. Stroud isn't the next Andrew Luck. He is the next C.J. Stroud. Andrew Luck was even balling the way C.J. Stroud is right now. But if this dude shows up like how he did last week against the Cleveland Browns, Houston is definitely going to be in this game. You see, it's hard to see Houston being able to keep this thing close only because you look at this game on paper and you see that the Ravens have a significant talent advantage. But when you have a quarterback that's hot like this, especially going into the postseason, there's not a single game that they can't win. You see what Jordan Love just did to the Dallas Cowboys. I know it's the Dallas Cowboys, but you talk about carrying on the Aaron Rodgers tradition of owning the Dallas Cowboys. This is what happens when you have a hot quarterback that's in ascension mode right now. You see, we saw the same thing with Trevor Lawrence last season. Late year, he got hot. When you have a young quarterback that gets hot late in the season, they get into a new level called ascension. And this is when they continue to grow. And I feel like when you have a quarterback like CJ Stroud in the playoffs, you're always going to get his best performance. And you can never really count this dude out just because the Texans have limitations on their offense. They may not have the best offensive line. He may just get sacked about five times in this game, just like how he did last time. Nico Collins, Dalton Schultz are his only reliable receivers. Listen, they can find a way to make this thing work because they have CJ Stroud. This dude is considered a top five quarterback by most people for a reason. He was in the MVP discussion at one point this season. So don't count out this dude just because he's a rookie quarterback and this is the second time you're going to face him. Like, this dude is him, and he's going to be a problem for the foreseeable future. And this gets me to my biggest point of this football game. Lamar Jackson can't lose this. Now, y'all know how much I love Lamar Jackson, the long legend from Pompano. But if the Ravens lose to the Texans, fam, I don't think I'm going to be able to look at Lamar for at least the next couple of months. This would be the worst playoff loss ever for a potential MVP winner. Lamar cannot lose this game. I know it's a team sport, but there's a lot of pressure on Lamar. You see, people keep saying that the Texans are playing with house money. They have nothing to lose. Like, I never understood people who say that because it's the damn playoffs, man. Everybody has something to lose. It's win, go home. Everybody's trying to get the Lombardi. But I do believe that playoff pressure is a thing. And Lamar Jackson, he handles pressure well. But at the same time, the big knock on Lamar Jackson right now is his inability to show up consistently in the playoffs. The last time he won a playoff game, it was against the Tennessee Titans. And in a game like this, when you have a quarterback in ascension mode, if you don't have your A game on, you're going to lose. You see, like, this dude, CJ Stroud, if Lamar Jackson doesn't play his best game and he has a little bit of an off performance and the Ravens start out slow, like, CJ Stroud is going to work him. He's a top five quarterback right now. This is the greatest first year season that I've ever seen out of a guy like CJ Stroud in all my years covering this sport. It's unbelievable what he's doing right now. The Ravens have a very good defense, but so does Houston. The Ravens' defense is better than Houston's, and it is by a pretty considerable margin, but let's not act like Baltimore's offense has just been red, scorching hot all season long. As a matter of fact, you can say that this offense has yet to reach their full potential. But you see, this defense is very good. And with how good Houston is defensively, and having a lot of familiarity with the Ravens offense already, they should be able to find a way to keep this game close. I'm going with Baltimore to win this game, but I wouldn't be surprised to see the Texans cover this thing. I'm going to take them with that +9. Baltimore plays their best football at home. We get that. But this is playoff football, and you're going up against CJ Stroud, who's playing at a top five level. And he also has a decent supporting cast around him. Yes, from an overall team standpoint, Baltimore is just way more superiorly better than what the Houston Texans are. But at the same time, when you have a quarterback in ascension mode like CJ Stroud, he elevates your team. The defense is going to have some juice. The offense is going to have some juice. Hell, even the coaches are going to have some juice in this game. This can be a close game. I still like Baltimore to win by a touchdown. I got them 31-24. But I can see Houston keeping this thing close with how good CJ Stroud has been playing. We got the Green Bay Packers taking on the San Francisco 49ers, people. Jordan Love has reached ascension mode. What ascension mode is when you got a young quarterback who gets hot late in the season and carries that momentum into the playoffs right now. And let me tell you, 49ers fans, something. Your secondary is not that good. Green Bay has a really good offensive line. You do have a really good pass rush, but this has been a down year from Nick Bosa. Come on, you can admit that. Like, Nick Bosa isn't even in the discussion for a defensive player of the year. That's how you know it's a down year, because nearly every other year he's in the discussion. All right, you got Chase Young. Haven't heard his name since he got traded. You got Arik Armstead, and you got some other guys who can get after the quarterback, but your pass rush production has been a little down this year. And if you can't get pressure on Jordan Love, these young wide receivers are going to cook your secondary. Your defensive backs are not that good. Charvarius Ward is like your highest paid cornerback, and he's gotten toasted a couple of times this season. So you give this brother Jordan Love some protection and some time to throw, and even then, he's good enough where he can get outside the pocket and extend plays. He does a lot of crazy throws when he's like turning his wrist all kinds of different directions. He's hot right now, and you're a 10-point favorite in this game. You're basically telling us that you're going to come in here and you're just going to annihilate the Green Bay Packers? Like, yeah, you annihilate the Cowboys, you annihilate the Philadelphia Eagles, but the Packers are by far maybe the best team out of the best ones that you beat in this year. Now, what concerns me about Green Bay and what makes this game a little wonky is that San Francisco still has a really good defense. All right, I wouldn't say great defense, but they still have a really good defense. And I'm not expecting Jordan Love to be moving the football up and down the field like he was the second coming to Aaron Rodgers like he did last week against the Dallas Cowboys. It's good to see Aaron Rodgers pass the tradition along of kicking the Dallas Cowboys' ass every time the Packers play them. Thanks a lot, Aaron, for gifting that to Jordan Love. But back to this. You see, the problem with Green Bay is that for them to win this game, you're going to have to pray to the football gods that Joe Burrow is still in his bag and he's cooking up some things on the defense side of football, because it's hard to really see this defense getting too many stops. They are pretty good against the pass, all right, and I am looking forward to seeing potentially Jair Alexander versus Brandon Ayuk. That's going to be a clash in itself, but their run defense is not that good. And I don't want to make it seem like we got to disqualify everything that they did against the Dallas Cowboys, but at the same time, the Dallas Cowboys are the Dallas Cowboys. The 49ers are far from what the Dallas Cowboys are. They are a well-coached team, and you got to be able to stop the run. I don't know if Green Bay is going to be able to do that. And basically, Green Bay is going to have to be completely flawless on offense to win this game. Let's just be honest about this. If you're a Packers fan, if your defense can at least get you two, maybe three stops in this game, maybe hold them to a field goal or two, that's a win in your book. When you think about how bad Joe Barry has been, he's been better calling plays last couple of weeks, but not against anybody worth noting. I mean, the Dallas Cowboys, we know what they do in the playoffs. But anyhow, okay, your offense has to score on every possession. Every single time they touch the football, it needs to be points. Rather, if it's a touchdown or a field goal, you just need to put points up on the board. And it also is possible to run the football on the San Francisco 49ers. It's possible. All right? Jordan Love, with how well he's been playing, nobody should be taking the Green Bay Packers lightly. You see, the NFC has been lacking superstar quarterbacks for the last couple of years. The AFC is full of them everywhere. The NFC doesn't really have that. We thought it was Jalen Hurts, but Jalen Hurts, we don't know what the hell has happened to him. So who's really the superstar quarterback that we have in this conference? Really nobody. And you look at Jordan Love right now, he's definitely fitting the mold. Hell, he's a top 10 quarterback to me. I don't know who you guys would take over Jordan Love, but it's a lot of quarterbacks that I would take Jordan Love over, especially Tua. So you look at the 49ers, you like how this offense stacks up against the Green Bay Packers defense. Like, you just got to cross your fingers that Joe Barry is still going to be able to be in his bag and cook up a couple of stops. I don't have any questions about how Brock Purdy's going to look in this game. All right, I believe that he's going to have a good performance. I don't think he's going to be rusty at all. The run game should be there. Green Bay does have a good rushing attack. Like, I'm taking the 49ers to win this game. But it is possible that the Packers can definitely win this thing. And I really want to reiterate that. Because the way Jordan Love is playing right now, this dude is on a different level. But you see, the problem with the Packers is that you got to be flawless on offense to make up for a lackluster defense. And their defense is pretty solid against the pass, but they aren't good against the run. And we know what the 49ers like to do. They want to run the football down your throat. And I just don't see how Green Bay's defense gets a lot of stops in this game. And their offense is going to score points, but they're going to have to be able to score nearly every possession to keep up with the 49ers. So give me San Fran 34, Green Bay 24. I got the 49ers winning by 10. The Buccaneers are traveling to Detroit to take on the Lions, man. The Buccaneers have been a really fascinating team to watch this season because nobody expected these dudes to be here. We all thought they were tanking for Caleb Williams. We thought Todd Bowles was a bad head coach. Baker Mayfield was no good. But for some reason, this Buccaneers team was able to put it all together. They were able to finished off the Philadelphia Eagles last week, and now they find themselves in the divisional round against the Detroit Lions, which seems to be America's team right now because everybody's rooting for the Detroit Lions. Hell, I was rooting for the Detroit Lions, and I took the LA Rams plus +3 last week. So this is a really interesting game because it really could go either way, in my opinion, depending on which version of the Tampa Bay Buccaneers we get to see. Now, last week, Tampa Bay's offense wasn't that great as what they should have been. They had some dropped passes. They had some self-inflicted wounds. And when you watch Tampa Bay's offense this year, you look at Mike Evans at wide receiver, Chris Godwin to go along with them. Cade Otton is a pretty young, good, up-and-coming tight end. And you look at Baker Mayfield's numbers, and you would think that this would be one of the best offenses in the NFL, but it's not. It's the middle of the pack offense. And the reason for that is because, for one, they can't run the football to save their life. And for two, they're too inefficient at times. There's certain games that the Buccaneers play in when their offense just goes ice cold. They may not get a first down for like two quarters, and then they start getting hot in the fourth quarter. Detroit secondary isn't that great. All right, like Cam Sutton is probably going to get cooked by Mike Evans. I'm ruling the bet money on it that he gives up a touchdown to Mike Evans in this game. But they got a really good front seven that's exceptional at getting after the quarterback. Tampa Bay's pass blocking has been pretty good this year. They did a pretty good job against the Philadelphia Eagles as well. Are you going to be able to hold up against Aiden Hutchinson? That's going to be a question. If you can, and you can get efficient quarterback play out of Baker Mayfield, and this offense can actually be able to sustain drives consecutively, and put together points, there's a path for the Buccaneers being able to win this game. Because they do have a really good defense. Now, is this a great defense? Is it Baltimore Ravens good? No, it's not. But it's still a pretty solid defense. And the most points that Todd Bowles has given up this year was like 30-plus to C.J. Stroud and the Houston Texans. They have a pretty good secondary. They got a really good defensive line. Hell, they may be one of the first teams that I can ever recall being able to stop the tush push. So this is a pretty good defense, and you're going to be matched up against an offense that is really complicated to stop. I mean, they just got weapons on top of weapons down there in Detroit, bro. It's like you stop Amon-Ra St. Brown, and you got to worry about Sam Laporta. You wrap him up, and then you got to worry about Jahmyr Gibbs and David Montgomery. And the last time these two teams played, the Lions won 20-6. But it wasn't like this offense was just moving the football up and down the field like humpty-doo-dee-doo. Like, if the Buccaneers' offense was a lot better in that game and they was able to get the defense some breaks, they possibly could have kept that thing a little bit closer. And that's the biggest key in this game for Tampa Bay being able to win. You need efficient, sustainable offense. Because I'm not going to expect Detroit's offense to just erupt against this Todd Bowles defense. Say what you want to say about Todd Bowles as a head coach. This dude is a hell of a defensive-minded coach. All right? This defense is going to come ready to play. And this is going to be a really interesting chess match because you got Todd Bowles versus Ben Johnson, the hottest young offensive mind in the league right now. And if Tampa Bay can keep the Lions under 20 points, and this offense can be sustainable and they can be efficient and not be streaky and inconsistent like they've demonstrated sometimes in the past this season, they got a shot at winning this thing. But you see, the problem with Tampa Bay is that, do you trust the coaching? They beat the Philadelphia Eagles last week. Like, the Philadelphia Eagles were pretty much all but a dead animal. It's like, you ever stepped on the cockroach, but the cockroach still crawling, but you know, with one more stomp in, the cockroach is going to be done for. That was the Philadelphia Eagles, bro. They were a dead bird walking. They were just waiting for somebody to put them out of their misery. You see, the Detroit Lions, they are a way better football team than what we saw at the Philadelphia Eagles last week. Hell, like, the Philadelphia Eagles didn't even play like a football team, if we just being honest about that thing. Everybody looked like they were just out there playing for themselves. You're going up against a team that is going to be up for this game. They're going to be playing at home. Todd Bowles needs to coach the best game of his life. If you're a Bucs fan, I'm pretty sure you know that Todd Bowles has done a good job. He's exceeded expectations, but he can be better. And there's too many times when you watch Tampa Bay when they just do dumb things that make you go like, what the hell were they doing? What the hell were they thinking about that? You know, like, the Buccaneers, for them to win this game, the defense needs to show up and needs to play good, and you need to get sustainable offense out of Baker Mayfield. And that should be plausible considering the fact that Detroit doesn't have a great secondary. But at the same time, Detroit has the coaching on their side. Jared Goff is playing outstanding football. And there's a lot of weapons that the Buccaneers have to worry about. And even though I don't like Detroit's defense all that much, I trust them enough that they should be able to slow down the Buccaneers' offense. And the Buccaneers, their offense is one-dimensional. They can't run the football at all. So I like Detroit to win. 23-14 is my final score prediction in this game. Maybe it could be a little bit closer. Maybe I'll go 23-17. Because the Buccaneers' offense, they can't get going. It's just, they're just so hit or miss. With the talent that they have, you would think this would be a top 5, top 10 offense in the league, performance-wise. They don't look like it consistently. You know, like, this offense could be a little bit better than what they've demonstrated this season. They've done a pretty good job, but I guess their inability to play complementary football is what hinders their offense's potential productivity level. I don't know, but I just know I like the Detroit Lions to continue to roar, and I got them with the W. It seems like we always got to get these two teams in the playoffs every single year. Chiefs, Bills, once again, people. Who's going to come out on top? Is Josh Allen finally going to break through? Because you look at Kansas City this season, and it seems like they've been down bad all year long. But you can never count out Patrick Mahomes and Big Red on the sideline. Meanwhile, the Buffalo Bills, there was a point this season when we didn't even know if these fools were going to make it to the damn playoffs or not. And all of a sudden, they go from barely making it into the playoffs to winning the AFC East and now looking like one of the hottest teams in football. And now everybody realizes, hey, the Buffalo Bills still have a chance to win the Super Bowl. And what's even crazier is that the Bills have had a lot of injuries. I don't think that gets talked about enough. Like, they got so many dudes injured on defense. Like, one of their replacements, who was replacing a starter, he got injured. And he was having a fantastic season. Like, I think he was leading the team in tackles. Number 43, I forgot his name, but he was balling. I mean, you're down Tre'Davious White at cornerback. But for some reason, this defense still keeps performing at a high level. And that's because of Sean McDermott. And may I say that maybe he deserves consideration for Coach of the Year. He doesn't have to win it, but you can at least make him a finalist. I mean, there was a point this season when Buffalo looked down and out. They had that game against the Denver Broncos when they just felt like giving out Christmas gifts early. I mean, now for them to just make this 360 turnaround, they make the change at offensive coordinator. Joe Brady now has been doing a pretty good job calling the plays. Josh Allen had his first ever game that I've ever watched when he didn't turn the football over. This is a scary team right now. And Kansas City, yeah, they beat the hell out of the Miami Dolphins, but that was to be expected because the Dolphins just were not a great team. You know, they don't show up against good teams, but Patrick Mahomes balled out in that game. All right. And what really surprised me is how often Andy Reid was choosing to air it out with Mahomes. I was thinking that with the weather conditions, they were going to take a smash-mouth football approach. But no. They were slinging that thing with some velocity on it, Mahomes was. And anytime the Chiefs and the Bills play, it always seems like a game that you know is going to come down to whichever one of these quarterbacks gets the ball last. And there's been so many times when it's looked like Josh Allen was finally going to get it done. And he just hasn't been able to come through. And I'm talking about the postseason, people. Like when they played the Chiefs a couple of times and they had to play Cincinnati. This looks like the year the Buffalo Bills can finally break through potentially. And no offense to Patrick Mahomes, but I kind of want the Bills to win this game. Because I want to see Josh Allen and Lamar Jackson in the AFC Championship. All right? Do you guys not know how big of a game that would be for both Lamar and Josh Allen potentially? Like, Mahomes has been there before. Josh Allen and Lamar, they haven't come close to winning a Super Bowl. One of those guys will have the opportunity to completely change the narrative about themselves and to completely alter their legacy right now, which is already seen in a pretty good light. But you look at Patrick Mahomes, though, this dude is like the Darth Vader of the NFL now. Like, anytime you think you finally got this dude down and out, they just find a way to pull something out of there. You know what? And it's always tricky when you got to go against the Kansas City Chiefs because Patrick Mahomes is just so hard to stop. Like, I'm glad I'm not a defensive coordinator having to call against Patrick Mahomes, bro, because third and loss, this dude is still getting the first down. He just makes the impossible seem possible. Consistently. I've never seen a quarterback that so effortlessly makes impossible shit look like it's elementary school ball. And the Buffalo Bills do have a pretty good pass rush, but you're really going to need Von Miller to get after him in this game. All right, you're giving Von Miller all this money, and who cares if he's washed up? You know, he should at least have a lot left in the tank for this game, for this moment, for this occasion. You see, when Buffalo played Kansas City back in the regular season when they went up against each other, Kansas City probably would have won that game if it wasn't for J.R. Toney being offsides. And when you look at the point spread for this game, Buffalo's only a 2.5-point favorite, possibly because they have the home field advantage. And that's another interesting dynamic about this game. Mahomes has always had the luxury of playing at home, but now he has to go on the road, and he has to deal with the noise of the Bills Mafia. And on-field advantage does matter in games like this. There's a reason why a lot of the higher seeds always are the teams to advance compared to the lower-seeded teams. I'm looking at the home-field advantage of Buffalo. That definitely has to factor into the point spread of this game. And I would agree that the Bills are a more complete team than Kansas City. Kansas City, their offensive line probably played one of their better games of the season. Normally, there are, and even then, their offensive line still was giving them penalties. You know, you got two offensive tackles that really aren't that great. Jerron Taylor is massively overpaid. But it's like, that was their best performance against the depleted defensive line of the Miami Dolphins. But the way their offense was looking, though, against the Buffalo Bills secondary, I believe they can make some things shake. Travis Kelce, it looks like he has kind of started to crank up the juice a little bit. He was looking a little washed up to me during the regular season, but he had a really great game against the Miami Dolphins. He was making plays, and he's possibly going to be making a lot of them again in this game against the Buffalo Bills. Kansas City, they got a really good defense. We know how good Kansas City's defense is, and we know how good of a defense Buffalo has, but what really separates these two teams from me is that Buffalo, to me, is a more explosive team overall than what Kansas City is. Kansas City hasn't been able to generate the big plays at will that they used to be able to in previous iterations. This is more of a methodical offense. We're going to take our time, move the football down the field. And I love Isaiah Pacheco. I love watching this dude run. But James Cook, he just brings a different dynamic to Buffalo's offense that Isaiah Pacheco doesn't bring to Kansas City's. This dude is just a true all-around weapon. He's good catching the football out of the backfield. He's a touchdown waiting to happen. Really good vision. Great speed. Incredible acceleration. He's like an Alvin Kamara 2.0, but better in my opinion. And with having him, he takes some of that pressure off of Josh Allen. And what's even more scary is that, imagine if you get a game out of Josh Allen where he again has no turnovers. A Josh Allen with no turnovers? You mean to tell me that you don't like the chances of Buffalo winning anytime he doesn't have any turnovers? Now, Kansas City's defense, they're really good, and we know how good they are. We know they got a good pass rush. We know that Chris Jones is a monster. And their secondary, I don't know if y'all seen what L'Jarius Sneed did to Tyreek Hill, but that was brutal. That was one of the best presses or one of the best jams that I've ever seen in the NFL. Hell, I rarely see receivers get jammed in the National Football League nowadays. So maybe he does the same thing to Stephon Diggs. But Kansas City, I think that this is going to be the year they finally fall to Buffalo in the playoffs. The reason why I'm confident about Buffalo winning this game is because for the first time in a while, it seems like they do outgun the Chiefs. It's not an even playing field. And I'm not counting out Mahomes. Like, I get that you can never count out Mahomes. But eventually, it's going to come a time when he needs a good enough supporting cast as what Josh Allen has. And he doesn't have that this season. You see, Mahomes has always had the luxury of having a full arsenal offensively. The Bills' defense is not Miami's. And Miami's defense didn't do that bad. It's just the offense ain't do them no favors. But Sean McDermott has done an incredible job ever since he taken over the play calling once he got rid of Leslie Frazier at the end of last year. And with how well this defense has played, and we've seen Kansas City's offense struggle to get the 20 for most of their games, Buffalo, I expect them to be able to sneak this game out. I'm not expecting it to be close because, you know, Mahomes in the playoffs is never going to go down without a fight. Kansas City does have a really good defense, but they just lack the necessary playmakers that you need to win in the postseason. You see, the NFL used to be so different. I remember a decade ago, back when I was in elementary school, the Baltimore Ravens played the 49ers in the Super Bowl. And they didn't really have any star-studded wide receivers. Like, I think they had old man Anquan Boldin. They had like Torrey Smith or something like that. But in today's age of the NFL and the year 2024, you gotta have weapons on offense to go far. You may not need to have a great offensive line, but you at least need to have playmakers on the outside. And that's something that Patrick Mahomes, for the first time in his career, unfortunately doesn't happen to have. And Travis Kelce is going to make plays, but he still isn't the player that he used to be. And just him isn't going to be enough. Like, you got Rashee Rice who's stepping up and emerging, but you need more. Like, Josh Allen has James Cook. I mean, you got Dalton Kincaid. You got Stephon Diggs. You got Davis. Meanwhile, Kansas City, their offense only revolves around about three players: Travis Kelce, Rashee Rice, and Isaiah Pacheco. And they don't have a reliable offensive line. You know, they got a great defense, but I'm just really confident in Buffalo's ability to get over the top this year. They're playing them at home. Kansas City, you beat them once, and you maybe would have lost that game if the ball would have bounced in a different direction. But, you know, I believe this is Buffalo's year that they get to the AFC Championship. And I really do believe that if there was a year for Josh Allen to break through and finally take down Mahomes in the postseason, this would be it. It really would, because Kansas City, I just don't see how their offense is going to be able to be sustainable with how good Buffalo's defense has played this year. Like, it is really hard to move the ball on Buffalo's defense. So I'm going to take the Bills to win 20-14 is going to be my final score prediction for this game. Before we move on, I got a couple of more things that I want to talk about, man. I want to talk about some wild card reality checks. Should the Cowboys really trade Dak Prescott? A lot of people seem to believe that they need to move on from him. You got Mike Tomlin running it back for another season with the Pittsburgh Steelers. I got a really interesting thought about how the media talks about Mike Tomlin versus how Steeler fans talk about Mike Tomlin. And it's never easy talking about Mike Tomlin because the dude always has winning seasons, but there's a caveat to that. And I want to talk about the Eagles' downfall and the Miami Dolphins' big concerns, bro, because they got some really huge concerns, in my opinion, bro. And a lot of people need to be throwing out the caution sign on them, because when Aaron Rodgers gets back fully healthy, okay. Before we move on, if you haven't already and you are enjoying this episode, leave a like, subscribe to the channel. Remember that we're not just a YouTube channel, we are a podcast, so you can find every episode of the podcast available in audio format on all podcasting platforms: Apple, Google, Spotify, Amazon, wherever you get your podcast from, the JT Sports Podcast. The Miami Dolphins season ended really ugly. They got smashed by the Kansas City Chiefs on Super Wild Card weekend, and it wasn't surprising. Because if you watch the Dolphins all year, you would know that, for one, they aren't a physical football team, and two, they never play good against good teams. Their best win was against the Dallas Cowboys, and we saw what happened to them. Yeah, they're at Cancun just along with the Miami Dolphins. You see, the Dolphins losing this game stems down to two main problems. All right. People are going to use the whole, well, they had so many injuries and all this and that. Even if you were healthy, you were still going to lose this game, because your two biggest problems were available for this game, and they should be the solution, not the problem. The first thing is that Tua Tagovailoa is not a good enough quarterback to lead the Miami Dolphins to a Super Bowl. I'm sorry, like, I like Tua. I have nothing against him as a person, but I don't get why these Dolphins fans defend this dude like it's a damn cult. Like, he's a good quarterback. But just because you're a good quarterback doesn't mean you're good enough to win a Super Bowl. You look at Tua the same way you look at Dak Prescott. They're good quarterbacks that are never going to play bad enough to replace him, but they're never going to play at a high enough level in the postseason when it counts to lead you to a Super Bowl. You see Mahomes? In Kansas City, they were slinging that thing in those terrible weather conditions. Meanwhile, Tua Tagovailoa, outside of that one big pass that he underthrew to Tyreek Hill, they struggled to move the football downfield. And I don't get how anybody thought that the Dolphins even had a chance of hell of being able to beat Kansas City when, in their regular season finale against the Buffalo Bills, they didn't get a single first down in the second half until, like, their final drive of the game, and Tua threw the ball away. Tua Tagovailoa, I don't know if you guys peeped it late in the game, but to me, he looked really timid. He looked scared of the moment. Now, I know that, you know, mentally, Tua probably didn't feel that way, but that's how it looked like. It looked like he was scared. Anytime the Dolphins get in a situation where Tua needs to come through, I've never seen this dude come through in a game that matters. And is that all on him? No, it's not, because we got to put a lot of the blame on Mike McDaniel. And I really believe that Mike McDaniel is a really good offensive-minded coach. But his problem is that He gets too latched on to throwing the damn football with the quarterback that isn't equipped to win you games by carrying the team on his shoulder. This offense is too predictable. Not in the play calling, but to the degree you know who's going to get the ball. They're either going to run the football with either Raheem or Devon Achane, or they're going to throw it to Jalen Waddle or Tyreek Hill. It's not that hard to figure out. And if I can figure this shit out, why do you think this offense always struggles to get the 20 points anytime they play a good team? The only team I can remember the Dolphins putting 20 points on or more under Mike McDaniel since he's become their head coach was against who? The Dallas Cowboys? That was it. Anybody else that they played this year that had a good defense, like the Buffalo Bills or the Philadelphia Eagles at one point when they used to be good, and the Kansas City Chiefs, they struggled to even get the 17. This offense is broken. And you can blame it on Tua, but you got to put it on Mike McDaniels, because there's been plenty of Dolphins games that I've seen when they've had success running the football in the first half, second half come around, and he just forgets about the run. Does he just hate running the football? It's strange that Mike McDaniel, for somebody who is a Kyle Shanahan disciple, who isn't as committed to the run as he needs to be and able to win games. Tua Tagovailoa is not a quarterback that is going to win you games in the playoffs throwing it 30-plus times or more. And what really is the hard pill for Dolphins fans to swallow is that Brian Flores was actually right. If the Dolphins ownership would have listened to him and allowed him to get either Jordan Love or Justin Herbert, you would have had a way better performance against the Kansas City Chiefs. I know that cuts deep, but let's just be honest, bro. Like, Justin Herbert is a better quarterback than Tua Tagovailoa. With Mike McDaniel having Tua, he has to build an offense around him, which kind of limits him in what he can do, and Tua can't push the football downfield. Justin Herbert would have been able to get the ball downfield because his arm strength. Tua, anytime he attempted a deep pass, that thing looked like it had no juice on it. It was just a soulless football that he was throwing. Like, I get Tua's a great person, but I don't get why these Dolphins fans just go so crazy to defend this dude. Like, you're not going to win anything with Tua unless you get extraordinary play calling out of Mike McDaniel. And with that requires your ability to play complimentary football. The Dolphins only care about throwing the football for quarterback that isn't equipped to win you games that way. And if I'm the Miami Dolphins, I'm drafting a quarterback this year. I'm taking either Spencer Rattler or Michael Penix, whoever's on the board, when I need to pick in the second round. Like, Tua Tagovailoa, he's one of those quarterbacks that you're just not going to replace just to replace. But he's always one of those quarterbacks that whenever you can definitely find a better option, you take that better option. He's not one of those quarterbacks that's going to be able to come through for you when it matters the most, unless he's just with a great head coach. You see, if Sean Payton had Tua Tagovailoa, that would be different. But unless he's going to an extraordinary offensive mind, which Mike McDaniel is a really good offensive mind, but he's not an extraordinary one yet, at least what we see anytime they go against a remotely good defense. You see, when it comes to the future of the Miami Dolphins, you should be really concerned if you're a Dolphins fan. Because what if Aaron Rodgers and the New York Jets actually can make it work next season? You're going to be that odd man out. First of all, because you can't freaking score in the division that has two good defenses. Gerard Mayo took over as a head coach in New England, so you can pretty much guarantee their defense is going to be good too. You got a good defense, but you have an offense that struggles to put up points against good defenses. And Josh Allen owns you, and Aaron Rodgers is probably soon going to own you too. Because how are you going to be able to score on good teams? How are you going to be able to score on the Jets if they are a good team next year? You see, when the Dolphins get a tougher schedule next season, they're not going to make the playoffs. Mike McDaniel is, what, 3-10 against teams that have a record of 500 or better? That's not sustainable. That's really problematic. The Dolphins fan base out there, they like to try to discard it and be like, at least we beat the teams we supposed to. Cool. But if you're going to use that as your defense mechanism, then don't be bragging about how you put 70 points on the Denver Broncos and then you get skull dragged by 20 plus against the Buffalo Bills the following week. They're beating up on weak teams. If the Dolphins played a schedule like what the Eagles played this season, they would not be in the playoffs. Hell, they lost to the Eagles. What does that tell you? Their best win against a good team this season came against the Dallas Cowboys. And where are the Cowboys at right now? Cancun along with the Dolphins. It's funny. You know what they say? Birds that have the same feathers flock in the same feathers or something like that. I don't know how it goes, but that's the Miami Dolphins and the Dallas Cowboys, two of the biggest frauds in the National Football League this season. If the Dolphins can't figure out how to get better play calling out of Mike McDaniel, then maybe they need to fire this dude. And if they can't get better quarterback play out of Tua, then maybe they need to part ways with him too. Or maybe one of these dudes needs to go. And if I'm the Dolphins, I'm picking Mike McDaniel over Tua. If you get Mike McDaniel a better quarterback, then I'm pretty confident the Dolphins can win. If you gave Mike McDaniel or Justin Herbert, the Dolphins probably would still be in the playoffs right now. Tua just limits you so much as a play caller because you just have to do everything in your power to scheme up and hide his limitations, which there's a bunch of them. He's not super mobile. He does have a great arm, and there's nothing special about Tua. The only thing good about him is that he has really good anticipation and timing, and that's about it. When I watch Tua, I'm not amazed. Like, I'm actually really bored when I watch Tua play. Like, I kind of want to see them with a better quarterback. This is Miami. This is South Beach, people. Come on, man. Like, we need better quarterback play down here, man. We should be having Lamar Jackson down here. We should be getting Lamarvelous quarterback play. Instead, like, you just got to watch Tua Tagovailoa. And I'm not a Dolphins fan, but, you know, I want to go to a Dolphins game since I live down here. But damn, bro, I want to be entertained. Just watching Tua play is so boring, bro. Like, he's so boring. Send him to another team and nowhere. Whoever doesn't have a big fan base, send him there. Like, he's just boring. The dude just has nothing special about him outside of pretty good accuracy and great anticipation. That's about it, bro. Other than that, he's like average, slightly above average at everything else. He's not a great athlete. He doesn't extend plays like that, and he doesn't rise up to the occasion when the game is on the line. Every time you ask Tua to step up, win us the game, you're our franchise quarterback, we drafted you over Jalen Hurts and Justin Herbert, show us why we were right to do that. And he never does. And the crazy thing is, their general manager still wants to have this dude around for a long term. And I got nothing wrong with that. But how much is he going to be making? Because if I'm going to be handicapped to this dude for another decade, then I at least need to make sure I got enough cap space at my disposal that I can put a great team around him. This dude just isn't it. And Mike McDaniel, maybe he needs to hire an offensive coordinator if he doesn't know how to put more emphasis on running the damn ball. Like, run the damn ball. It's not that hard. Raheem Mostert had like 20 touchdowns this year. And for some reason, they just forgot about him against Kansas City. For some odd reason. Isn't that strange? If the Dolphins don't clean this up and they can't get better quarterback play out of Tua, and Mike McDaniel's offenses keep getting shut down against good defenses, they're going to get exposed next season if the Jets end up actually being something. There's going to be an odd man down in this division. It could be New England, and it could be the Miami Dolphins. I'm just saying, like, the Dolphins right now have some major concerns. You just can't sweep being 3-10 as a head coach against teams with winning records underneath the rug and act like everything's going to be okay. Because how are you ever going to go far in the playoffs if you can't beat good teams? Mike Tomlin is going to be back for another season, people. And, you know, everybody was saying Steeler fans were idiotic to ever get mad about Mike Tomlin and say that he needs to get fired. Like, the dude has never had a winning season. And it's so funny how ESPN is so quick to post that statistic about Mike Tomlin always having consecutive winning seasons, but they never post that graphic about how long it's been since he last won a playoff game in Pittsburgh. And you see, when it comes to Mike Tomlin and his job performance with the Pittsburgh Steelers, a lot of people in the national media seem so fixated on handing out participation trophies. You see, Mike Tomlin never having a losing season is definitely a huge achievement, and I'm not going to undermine that. I always give Mike Tomlin the respect and credit he deserves for doing that, because having a winning season every year is something that a lot of fans who root for bad teams wish their head coach could do on his worst season. You feel me? So if you can consistently go 9-8, win 10 games occasionally, you're a really good football coach. That means that there's something in your coaching philosophy that you do that is sustainable and it works if you never are able to have a losing season. But you see, here's the problem that Steeler fans have, that the national media and people who aren't Steeler fans or don't root for the team or always make excuses for Mike Tomlin seem to not register. Never having a losing season isn't the equivalent to hoisting a Lombardi trophy. What does never having a losing season do? Like, honestly, okay, cool. You won 9 games, you went to the playoffs, you got your ass kicked. Cool, you win 10 games the following season, you go to the playoffs and you lose again. What's the point of going to the playoffs just to always lose? You feel me? Eventually, when does the goal get back to what it used to be? Competing for championships every single season. You see, the national media always loves to rally and give participation trophies, right? But nobody likes to talk about how the standard in Pittsburgh has went down. This used to be a gold standard organization. This used to be a championship franchise. That Super Bowl or bust was the expectation every single season for Pittsburgh. And ever since they lost to Aaron Rodgers, the expectations have went down. Pittsburgh had two of maybe the greatest skilled position players at their positions of the past decade and didn't win a Super Bowl with them. Antonio Brown and Le'Veon Bell. You remember the Killer Bees? Hell, Big Ben was in his prime, and the only thing Mike Tomlin had to show for that talent was getting blown the hell out in the AFC Championship by the New England Patriots. Oh, well, it's not Mike Tomlin's fault the team is never good. Mike Tomlin specializes in defensive back play, right? Wasn't he like a secondary coach when he was coming up? So why is it that the Steelers haven't had a good secondary since I've been watching this team play? The last time I remember this secondary actually being good was a very long time ago. The linebacker play is never really that great. There hasn't been great linebacker play since Ryan Shazier played. You see, the defense has not been that great for Pittsburgh as people make it out to be. And the reason for that isn't because Mike Tomlin has a lack of talent. He has three of arguably the best players at their respective positions in the NFL. Cam Hayward at DT. You got TJ Watt, arguably the best pass rusher in the league. And Minkah Fitzpatrick, arguably the best safety in the league. What more talent do you need? And it's really naive to think that Mike Tomlin doesn't have a say in what players get added on to this roster when he's been with this team as long as what he has been. If he wants a player, they're going to go out and get a player. All right? You see, Mike Tomlin defenders always want to deflect the blame on somebody else other than the problem itself, that being Mike Tomlin. There was no excuse for the Steelers to lose to the Jacksonville Jaguars at home in the divisional round that year. And I will never get over that. And I will never forgive Mike Tomlin for that. That was an unforgivable loss. You let the Jaguars with Blake Bortles and Leonard Fournette roll over you again? Again? Remember the first time they played Big Ben? Damn, they retired because of that, with how bad he played in that game. And then you lose to an interim head coach during the COVID year? Like, a lot of people never talk about that when it comes to Mike Tomlin. Nobody ever talks about that loss to the Cleveland Browns. An interim head coach, Baker Mayfield? Are you kidding me? Are you kidding me? And if you want to take it back even further, I remember when the Steelers lost to Tim Tebow with that ugly-ass, slow-behind throwing motion, throws a dart to Demaryius Thomas. He's darting up the sidelines, sends the Steelers packing the KuCon. I mean, Mike Tomlin is a good coach, but let's stop acting like he's a great coach, all right? And when it comes to the Steelers moving on from Mike Tomlin, this is what's messed up about it, all right? If Mike Tomlin had a quarterback, like a really good quarterback, I wouldn't have no problem with him remaining the head coach. But you see, the Steelers don't have a great quarterback situation right now. And are they ever going to improve that? I don't know, because I don't trust this franchise to be able to do it. Like, I listened to a game when the announcer said that they talked to Mike Tomlin during the post-game or the preparation interviews and stuff for the game, right? The production interviews that they do. And he said that he went with Mitch Trubisky because he had experience being a franchise quarterback in the past. Like, that alarmed me. And with Mike Tomlin saying that, it didn't surprise me because look at who they drafted in the first round a couple of years ago. Kenny Pickett. So, the fact that Mike Tomlin is a defensive-minded coach, but doesn't know how to find a good quarterback is why he continues to come up short in the playoffs. You see, Mason Rudolph played okay against the Buffalo Bills. He played good enough to be better than to be starting over Kenny, that's for sure. But being better than Kenny Pickett isn't that big of a bragging right. You know, like, the Steelers need to go out there and you need to get an actual quarterback in the draft, like a Caleb Williams or a Drake May. But guess what? The Steelers will never be able to do that. You want to know why? Because Mr. never has a losing season. It's so damn good as a coach that he's going to F you over when it comes to draft position because you're never going to be bad enough to get a premium quarterback in the draft. So you're always stuck with the boom or bust players or the average at best players at quarterback when it's your time to pick. And that's the problem with Mike Tomlin. You're not winning championships with him, but you're not losing enough to help solve the biggest issue with this team, the lack of good quarterback play. And you got a head coach that doesn't know what the hell he's doing. Like, listen, I like Mike Tomlin. I really do. And I really don't want to see him coach anywhere else other than Pittsburgh. Only because, I'm going to be honest with you, especially if you're a Steelers fan like me, I'm scared to dream about what life is post-Mike Tomlin. You see, a lot of Steelers fans make the idea of moving on from Mike Tomlin sound so great. And it does sound great at times until you think about this, the grass isn't always greener on the other side. And it's really hard to find a head coach who at worst is going to be 9-8. Do you know how good that is? But at the same time, there also has to be a coach who can get the Steelers over the top. So is it a necessary risk that I think the Steelers should take eventually? Give Mike Tomlin 2 more seasons to get this right. I'm willing to give him that because this dude is an outstanding coach, all right? And that's never been my problem with Mike Tomlin. I've always given him props for being a good coach. My problem is that he has plateaued in Pittsburgh. That's my biggest problem with Mike Tomlin, all right? And my reasoning for wanting Mike Tomlin fired is simply for the fact that I want the standard to go back to what it used to be. Is that so outrageous? I got to be called an Uncle Tom for just wanting the Steelers to get back to competing for Super Bowls, not being okay with going 9-8 every season? What's so wrong about me wanting that as a fan? Don't you not want the same for your team? You see, like, that's what ESPN never talks about, how the Steelers have been stagnant under Mike Tomlin. Yes, we know that this dude can do more with less, but part of the roster not being up to par is his doing. Like, Artie Burns was a cornerback in the first round. He was a bust. They drafted Terrell Edmonds over Lamar Jackson. As a Steeler fan, I would never get over that because I wanted Lamar Jackson. Lamar Jackson was drafted by the Baltimore Ravens, which makes it even more worse for me. Every time I see Lamar play, I always think to myself, bro, like, we drafted Terrell Edmonds over you. How much of a fool we were to do that. So it's just like, the Steelers do a really good job at drafting, but some of their draft picks when it comes to players in the defensive back in the first round have been awful. Like, Artie Burns, yeah, he definitely lived up to his last name because he got burned hell of a lot. Like, the Pittsburgh Steelers, I'm okay with Mike Tomlin coming back for another season, but I do feel like he needs to be on the clock. He needs at least 2 more seasons to prove that he can get the Steelers to at least the divisional round or the conference championship game. Because eventually, like, you got to get tired of tolerating complacency. And it's funny because Mike Tomlin always talks about not being okay with mediocrity and complacency, but that's all the Steelers have been the past decade under him. So when it comes to how the national media views Mike Tomlin and how Steeler fans who want him fired view Mike Tomlin, I always disagree with the narrative that the Steeler fans who want Mike Tomlin fired are wrong and they don't know what they're talking about. Because they do have a point. And I sometimes flip between the fire Mike Tomlin minority and the keep Mike Tomlin minority because this dude still is a really good coach. You can't deny the fact that your worst is losing 8 games and still having 9 wins, still being in playoff contention, that's impressive. But at the same time, what's the point of that when you don't get anything out of it if you're just going to lose in the playoffs? So that's really my thoughts on Mike Tomlin. You know, you guys let me know how you guys feel about him down in the comment section down below. But I just get a little bit annoyed when people always defend Mike Tomlin like he can do no wrong. Like, there are some valid criticisms to wanting him to be out of Pittsburgh. You know, some I agree with, some I disagree with. Like, I still lie in the middle of how I feel about Mike Tomlin. I love the brother as a head coach. I love what he does for the locker room. A lot of the players mess with him. It's just that his defenses aren't always great, and his defenses never stop elite quarterbacks in the playoffs. Like, when's the last time Mike Tomlin ever had an elite defense that stopped the elite quarterback? Like, Josh Allen normally throws the ball to the other team every game he plays in. No turnovers against Pittsburgh, though. Dak Prescott's performance against the Green Bay Packers was ugly, to keep it PG. And a lot of Dallas Cowboy fans are sick of this dude at quarterback, and you want to get rid of him. And people have been wanting to get rid of Dak Prescott for a while now. It seems like for 3 or 4 years straight now, there's been Cowboy fans out there and other people in the media screaming, trade Dak Prescott. And look, the idea of trading away Dak Prescott and getting a better quarterback sounds appealing. It really does. But the problem is, who are you going to replace Dak Prescott with that you know is going to be a significant upgrade? Because Dak Prescott is still a top 10 quarterback, all right? Even though he has his shortcomings in the playoffs, there's still only a handful of quarterbacks that you would take over Dak. So with Dak Prescott, the dude plays good enough that you believe you can win with him, but he never plays bad enough that you want to replace him. You see the dilemma that the Cowboys are in? And now he's due for a new contract extension, and he wants $60 million a year. Like, hell no, I'm not paying you $60 million. Anything that Lamar, Patrick Mahomes, Josh Allen, Joe Burrow, and Justin Herbert are making, Dak Prescott shouldn't get anywhere remotely close to what those dudes are making. And if he does, they need to renegotiate their contracts and go back to the seeding table, because there's levels to this. You see, you got your tier one quarterbacks like Lamar, Burrow, Allen, Mahomes, and then you got your tier two quarterbacks, which is where Dak Prescott is at right now. And I don't believe that the problem in Dallas is Dak Prescott. The dude is too good of a regular season quarterback to be this terrible in the postseason. There was something wrong with the coaching. And it goes to Mike McCarthy. I thought that it was a stupid hire of hiring him in the first place. It was a safe conservative hire, but who cares? You're the Dallas Cowboys. Take a risk. Hell, go out there and get a legend. You could have got Sean Payton last season. All you had to do was trade for him. You wasted a first-round pick anyway on Mozzie Smith, because what has he done this season for you? But I don't believe that Dak Prescott is the entire problem in Dallas. I believe you can win with a Dak Prescott. I believe you can win with the Kirk Cousins. Hell, you can win with a Tua Tagovailoa as long as you put them in the right situation with a great head coach. Dak Prescott had one of, if not the best season of his career. He was an MVP candidate at one point. There are players who eventually can break through the cracks. It's hard to find a Dak Prescott in today's NFL. So unless you guys have any other better solutions out there of who the Dallas Cowboys can realistically go out there and get, who can be an upgrade from Dak Prescott, like, can you trade for Caleb Williams? Probably not. But if you could, okay, now we're talking. Caleb Williams over Dak? Okay, I wouldn't be against it. Now, Dak Prescott compared to Justin Herbert, do you make that trade? Absolutely not. You're not taking Justin Herbert over Dak Prescott, man. Like, Dak Prescott is one of the best pure throwers of the football in the National Football League. The Cowboys are just stuck with this dude until they can find a better young solution. Maybe that's Trey Lance. Who knows? But until they can find somebody to sit behind Dak Prescott who they can groom for the next couple of years, who can become his successor, they're not going to be able to get rid of him, because you're never going to find a quarterback that's good enough to give you the same level of play that this dude has. He plays well in the regular season. I have a hard time believing that he can't play well in the playoffs. I've seen him play well in the playoffs before. It's possible. He wasn't always trash in the playoffs. He looked pretty solid his first time ever making it to the playoffs. And he looked good when they beat Tom Brady and the Buccaneers. And then he just fell apart against San Francisco. That's coaching to me. Dak Prescott is not a quarterback that you can't win the Super Bowl with. The dude is a pretty good leader. He doesn't look like Tua gets small in the big moments. I think he's capable. And this isn't me being biased. I just really think that the coaching just is too sorry. To be real with you, if you get a Bill Belichick in the building, if you're Jerry Jones, and you can get Josh McDaniels in there, I bet they can win with Dak Prescott in the playoffs. Hell, if you get Jim Harbaugh, I'm pretty sure he can win with Dak Prescott in the playoffs. You see, Dak Prescott can't go anywhere anytime soon. Unless you're about to replace him with the quarterback, there's only so many quarterbacks out there. You see, the quarterback market now is getting so saturated with talent that quarterbacks that a decade or two ago that might have been considered good are average now, and teams want to replace them. Dak Prescott is still a top 10, top 12 quarterback at worst, depending on how you feel about him. And with him being a top 10 quarterback, how many other top 10 quarterbacks are out there that you can replace Dak Prescott with? You couldn't get Lamar Jackson. You're not going to be able to get Joe Burrow, Justin Herbert, or any of the other top guys anytime soon. So unless you trade up for a Caleb Williams or you find a way to get a young quarterback in the draft, you're stuck with Dak Prescott. The quarterback position is way too valuable to be taking gambles with dudes who have the capability of being able to get it done. Like, we've seen worse quarterbacks than Dak Prescott make it to the Super Bowl. Like, I would take Dak Prescott over Joe Flacco. The only reason y'all probably would disagree with it is because Joe Flacco has the playoff success. But Joe Flacco has been under one of the longest tenure head coaches in NFL history. Dak Prescott had the master clapper and Mike McCarthy. You give this dude a better head coach, I'm pretty confident he can win because he's one of those quarterbacks that needs to be slightly elevated by coaching. Not a lot, just slightly elevated. And giving him a better coach could bring the best out of him. And I just don't think Mike McCarthy or Jason Garrett were those guys. And you know, like, Dak Prescott wasn't the only quarterback who was coming up short in the playoffs. So was Tony Romo. So is it a Dak Prescott thing or is it a Dallas Cowboys organizational thing that they just have a tendency of consistently underperforming once the postseason rolls around? They've only won 5 games since they won last the Super Bowl. And the last time they won the Super Bowl, you were still watching those replays on VHS tapes and cassettes. If I'm the Cowboys, I'm stuck with Dak Prescott. Unless somebody comes calling and the Bengals want to, for some odd reason, want to trade Joe Burrow for Dak Prescott or the Ravens want to trade Lamar for Dak Prescott or something like that, then you do it. But there aren't really a handful of quarterbacks that you can name that are better than Dak Prescott who are easily attainable. So I wouldn't pay him a massive contract, but the Cowboys are stuck with Dak Prescott. They're stuck with Dak Prescott. Now, we got to study the downfall of the Philadelphia Eagles, man, because they had one of the most gruesome collapses in recent memory. And just them losing to the Tampa Bay Buccaneers was something that I knew could happen, but I never believed it would happen. And we can go to the start of this collapse happening all the way back to the offseason once they decided to re-sign Darius Slay and James Bradberry, which was a really bad decision by Howie Roseman when you look at it in future perspective, right? Now, back then, you could have said it was a good move, but with both of those guys being pretty up there in age, you knew that they were going to fall off eventually. And then you get bad play from those guys, but also your coaching staff is completely raided. Jonathan Gannon is now the head coach of the Arizona Cardinals, and Shane Steichen, your offensive coordinator, who Nick Sirianni, his first year as head coach in Philadelphia, gave up the play calling duties to, he's now the head coach of Indianapolis. So now you bring in two new coordinators that don't have a proven track record. Their offensive coordinator didn't really have a great resume. And then you hire Sean Desai to be your defensive coordinator when he was on Pete Carroll's staff with the Seattle Seahawks. There's never been anybody that came from Seattle staff that has proven to be a remotely competent defensive coordinator. So you re-signed James Bradberry and Darius Slay at cornerback. That was a big mistake. Then you go ahead and you made two bad hires at coordinator. DC and OC. That was a mistake. And then you get into the season and you start 10-1. Cool, everything is smooth sailing, even though you've had a couple of close games here and there. Like, you had a close game against Kansas City. You had a close game against the Buffalo Bills. That's cool. But what started to go wrong in the second half of the season when things started to go downhill? You had a lot of injuries. You were depleted at linebacker. Your safeties were injured. Your cornerbacks were injured. You had tons of injuries everywhere on defense. And offensively, the offense just has lost its mustard. But the offense was already being a little bit wonky, even during your win streak when you were 10-1, because it didn't take you getting like a big play in the second half against Kansas City to really get your offense going again. And outside of doing the tush-push well, you weren't really doing a lot of things well outside of running the football with DeAndre Swift. Well, in the second half of the season, we barely hear DeAndre Swift's name being called. And he was the focal point of this offense. And you thought that Jalen Hurts was going to take that next step as a passer. But he didn't take that next step. He has regressed. And he also has played banged up ever since the season first started, I believe he was injured. So he wasn't fully healthy. This definitely was a down year. Plus, he's in a new system with an offensive coordinator that isn't good. So you get not great quarterback play, which leads to dysfunction on the sideline. A.J. Brown being disgruntled at one point in the season. Devontae Smith making some bold statements in his postgame interviews. And then defensively, what really put the cherry on top of the collapse for me was when you went from Sean Desai, your defensive coordinator, to Matt Patricia. The last time I saw Matt Patricia calling plays on defense was when he was the head coach of the Detroit Lions and Houston on Thanksgiving, back when they had Deshaun Watson was running trick plays on his defense. His final season in New England, he wasn't even the defensive coordinator. He was the offensive coordinator. And you go from Sean Desai to him, and the defense, yeah, had a couple of bad games, but was it ever bad to the point where you needed to make a change at defensive coordinator? I mean, if you were going to rough it out with anybody, rough it out with the dude who was part of you being 10-1. Everybody has a couple of stretches during the season when things get a little bit shaky and they don't perform to the best of their ability. Hell, the 49ers could have done the same thing with Steve Wilks at one point in the season when they went on their little losing streak. But instead, they stuck with him, allowed him to work out the wrinkles, and look how good their defense has been playing ever since. Nick Sirianni made a terrible decision to move on from his defensive coordinator who had them at 10-1 for Matt Patricia. Like, Fatty Patricia is not it as a defensive coordinator anymore. As a matter of fact, he probably should be a position coach at this point. So, overall, I'm looking at this Eagles' downfall. It's definitely one of the most shocking downfalls that I've seen. And it kind of came out of nowhere, but you go back and you look back at those Bills and those Dolphins games and those Chiefs games, and you felt like if the game would have bounced in the other team's direction, they possibly could have lost. So it's not like the Eagles were looking like a flat-out dominant team, even in their wins against some of the better opponents in the league. So there already was a little bit of some red flags out there about this Philly team, but just when they made the change from defensive coordinator with Sean Desai and Matt Patricia, that was really much the cherry on top of the collapse. And then what happened? The first game, Matt Patricia was their defensive coordinator. Drew Lock engineers a 10-play, 92-yard game-winning touchdown drive. What a way to start your career off as Philadelphia's DC, Matt Patricia. Moving forward for Philadelphia, you got to get Bill Belichick in there. Either you got to get Bill Belichick or Jim Harbaugh. Or maybe a Ben Johnson. Ben Johnson would do perfect in Philadelphia. It's just Nick Sirianni, he's a high, charismatic guy. He has a lot of juice to him. But he doesn't really do much as a head coach. Like, his in-game decision-making isn't really the best. Clock management is meh. And just to have this big of a collapse with the team as talented as what the Eagles are, that's just an indictment on the head coach. And I wouldn't be mad at them for making the change. You probably could say that he was carried by his coordinators. Hell, Shane Steichen looks like a pretty good coach. And same thing with Jonathan Gannon. He got a couple of big wins when Arizona wasn't expected to be that good this season. This is it for this episode of the JT Sports Podcast. I appreciate everybody for tuning in. Leave a like, subscribe to the channel if you haven't already. Remember that we're not just a YouTube channel. We are a podcast. So every episode of the podcast, once it gets done airing live, you can find it on all podcasting platforms, Apple, Google, Spotify, Amazon, wherever you get your podcast from. The JT Sports Podcast is available. I should be going live Thursday. I want to talk some college football because there's a lot of college football news that I wasn't able to get my thoughts on. So you can definitely expect another live stream on Thursday. And I'll probably hit on some NFL topics too. If you guys have anything that you guys want me to discuss on a future episode, you can hit me up on my social media platforms, X at JT Sports _, on Instagram at JT Sports _, or you can give the podcast a 5-star review on Apple. Leave a question there and I definitely would get to it. Appreciate everybody for tuning in. Have a good rest of your night, and I will see you guys shortly with another episode.